There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables.
Ooh, yum.
And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notify, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
Hello and welcome back to the Fantasy Pros Football Podcast. My name is Derek Brown, and on today's show, we're going to dive a little bit behind the curtain. We're going to go deep into the Discord community for Fantasy Pros. Today's show is a series of clips that were taken from our live round two NFL draft coverage on Discord, where we gave instant live reactions to every skill player taken during the second round. Only premium subscribers had access to all of our day two draft coverage, which is hosted by Pat Fitzmaurice, Scott Bogman, Andrew Erickson, Thor Nystrom, and myself. If you want to be part of Discord and get direct access to myself and the other analysts at Fantasy Pros, you got to become a premium subscriber today at fantasypros.com/premium and join the Discord at fantasypros.com/chat. Now, let's talk to the pros. Cardinals are trading the pick to the Tennessee Titans. Is this for Will Levis?
Oh, this might be for Will Levis.
I think it could be for Will Levis. I can't see that they're going to move up for anybody else. We're going to see what per Albert Breer what the package looks like here. But you got to believe, again, like this happened pretty much in short order. Ah, here we go. Albert Breer. There we go. The Tennessee Titans are taking Will Levis. Will Levis is off the board. Thor, your thoughts?
We had heard some smoke with regards to the Titans and looking into, you know, both him and Hooker.
I talked about it in here earlier. I said Tennessee was rumored to trade up, and then we saw it happen.
I got two hot takes outside of that. Number one, I don't know that Levis ever beats out Malik Willis. If that actually becomes a true competition, I would still prefer Malik Willis with that. But the other take is this new administration that Tennessee had that came in, right? Like a lot of times you hear with new administrations, as far as the head coach and the staff, that they want to pick their own guy. Maybe that's a case of that here. Obviously they didn't pick Malik Willis. That was the past administration. They wanted their quarterback, and they've gone up and gotten Levis as he fell through the cracks here, whatever. But if I was another NFL team that wanted a developmental quarterback, we're on the phone line right now lowballing offers for Malik Willis for sure. Like a team like the Vikings that was sniffing around the quarterback class, didn't get one. I'm sending in all kinds of lowball offers for Malik Willis right now trying to get that thing worked out.
Well, I threw this out here for conspiracy wise earlier because, again, as an extension of the Will Levis pick, do you think it's plausible right now, last year of his contract, we see Ryan Tannehill moved to the Falcons?
Plausible, yeah. Yeah. But like in this current scenario, if you do that and you don't have another guy there, like what then? Are you going to start Willis, even though you just sort of publicly denounced your, you know, at least the current administration's faith in him by making this pick? You're not going to have Will Levis.
You could sign Teddy Bridgewater. I mean, he's still hanging out there. If you're really looking for like a stopgap to give him somebody to compete with in camp.
I mean, you could. If I'm that new administration, I don't know that I'm doing that. Like, but yeah, I mean, we know that Tannehill's on the block. And then, you know, what are they going to do with Malik Willis now that, you know, as far as having Will Levis as well? They got some stuff to work out there. I'm not exactly sure what their plan is with regards to that. But yeah, you definitely can't start Will Levis next year. That's out of the question. So it's like, if you trade Tannehill, you got to have some other plan. And I'd be down starting Malik Willis, see what you have there. Last year, obviously, when he was starting those three games, it was a really, really gnarly situation, you know, as far as the offensive line and the wide receivers he was playing with. But, yeah, like, I just don't know how that's going to play out.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting, man. I know I'm not a believer in Levis. I told you from the outset, I thought Will Levis was, he should have had a second round grade on him. The fact that the only reason he was in the first round conversation was because of the position he plays. That was it. Outside of that, I don't think he ever should have been discussed in the first round. And this is not tossing shade at the dude. I'm happy that he finally got a home in the NFL. But I mean, what are your concerns about Will Levis, Thor? I mean, obviously the accuracy stuff, he talked about some of the injury stuff, but really looking at the nuance of his game, what concerns you the most about if he fails, this is how he fails? And give me the flip side of that coin. If Will Levis succeeds and becomes the guy that people hope, how does he do it?
The two things you got to fix, it's the mechanics, which are fixable, because some throws they're like, those are on, right? Like, and he's like, you know, it's combine throwing session. Like, obviously he minded his mechanics at that time. It's more a nonchalance with that, with regards to him. So there's a path to fixing that pretty easy. The one that there is not, is the thing of the lack of pocket presence and not sensing the pass rushers. Certainly coming from the blind side, a lot of those pressures got converted into sacks, like a dangerously high number. And then the other one is when he finally denotes the pressure, you know, interior pressure, whatever, when he finally sort of gets it right when it's on the doorstep, a lot of times invariably when he's not getting sacked, he's making wonky decisions. And like the number one thing I look for in quarterbacks when I'm picking out the bus, it's that lack of pocket presence and not being good under duress. And Will Levis is not. Now, his right arm, it's golden. Like, that is for real. Like, he has a nasty right arm. But it's like, to get to the point where he's the solid NFL starter, you have to fix the pocket presence thing. And he's, like, people have forwarded, like, oh, he's the next Josh Allen. No, he's not. The utility with him, you know, like, just talk about the mobility and what you get from him as a runner. Like, he's not the athlete Josh Allen is. He's not as big as Josh Allen. And Will Levis, when he runs, he's just straightforward. It's just going north-south. Like, he doesn't have any make you miss, whatever. And he's a tough kid. So, like, but like, he'll take big shots running down the field, right? Because he's, like, a really easy target to hit. And he doesn't want to, you know, like, say die. He doesn't want to go down and give up on the play, whatever. So, like, he takes a lot of shots there. He obviously takes a lot of shots in the pocket, but I had to make that point too, because it's, yeah, like, he's further away. Because at least with Josh Allen, like, yeah, he had the accuracy issues. He's in college. He certainly had to fix the mechanics to improve that. But, like, the thing of panicking under pressure, I never saw that with Josh Allen. Like, that was one of the things he was best at. Right, was like, you know, he would get that pressure and, like, I mean, he would be still looking upfield through it, and then he would fight through the guys, right? Like, it wasn't just he immediately dropped his eye level, you know, and gave up on the player, like, whatever. Oh, Sammy Laporta,
yeah,
let's go.
Baby, I was waiting for that reaction.
Sammy ball game, let's go.
Oh, and everybody here, the subs, what did I say?
What
did I say, baby?
We just cashed some tickets.
We wanted Sammy Ball game.
We cashed some tickets,
I said it,
baby.
In this space before we went live, baby. We're two cash. For two, Thor. Two,
let's go.
Thor, two, baby. Sammy Ball game. Thor, preach the good news about Sammy Ball game.
Yeah, and I like this pick. Like, you know, there's yes. Many people that question this over Michael Mayer. But the thing is, Sam Laporta is objectively a better receiver than Michael Mayer. He just is. Michael Mayer can't make people miss after he catches the ball. Like, you know, he can fight off a couple, like, smaller safeties and whatnot in college. But Sam Laporta is a legitimately awesome yak tight end. Like last 10 classes. In fact, to look at the data on this, over the 9-year history of PFF charting, Sam Laporta last season, his 24 missed tackles was number five during that time over those nine seasons for an FBS tight end. And you think about how many people were included in that data set. You know, when you have 130, now 131 FBS teams, you times that by nine. Sam Laporta is in the top five of that. He's also a first down and touchdown monster by the percentage, by the market share, particularly when you consider the rancid offensive environment that he was coming from at Iowa last year, where they finished 130th in points out of 131 in the FBS. They only scored 18 or 19 offensive touchdowns. Four FBS players had more. Sam Laporta still, two out of every three catches he had last 2 years in college, either went for a first down or a touchdown. He was the best receiving tight end left on the board, and in my opinion, the number two one in the class. The thing that you don't get him that you get with Mayer is, Mayer, you can play inline every single snap, and he's going to give you effort as a blocker. Laporta played a lot of inline at Iowa, but like I question whether he can go up against them war daddies in the NFL. Certainly in the slot, he's going to take care of that nickel defense. It's not a lack of effort with him, right? Like he brings a lunch pail. He's an Iowa tight end. He's getting after it as a blocker. But like with his frame, that's the only thing that you're concerned about is like trying hard is not going to do it against some of those war daddy edge guys in the NFL. But like, you know, with that caveat being said, obviously you're going to be fine in the slot and you are going to be able to play him in line. Just if you just can't have him like have a run concept, like go, you know, off tackle or whatever to his side when he's like facing one of those 6'6" long levered guys, speed to power guys. It's like Sam Laporta going to get pushed back then. But as long as you keep him out of situations like that as a blocker, he's going to be fine. I think he can also improve in that area, you know, as far as like the technique, whatnot, level it up a little bit. But the receiving thing speaks for itself. This is a very good day for Jared Goff. He is going to have a lot of fun with Sam Laporta, and he's going to get a lot of free yards that maybe he didn't deserve.
Holy.
He gets the ball to Laporta, and he breaks tackles.
Crap. Well, we're apparently experiencing a tight end run. The Raiders have traded up, and they are taking Michael Mayer at 35 after a trade with the Colts. I know we love Sammy Ballgame. Tell me your thoughts on Michael Mayer to the Raiders, dude. I mean, like, outside of behind what, Davante Adams, Jacoby Myers, there should be a lot of targets here, man. I mean, I honestly thought this Raiders pick was going to be a trade up for a corner. Maybe the dark horse being Hendon Hooker. I did not see Michael Mayer coming here, but give me the full spiel for Michael Mayer here going to Las Vegas.
Yeah, well, I appreciate the natural segue that the Raiders gave us there because we can go right into Michael Mayer. Again, like the utility with him, it's if you just want the inline, like you're just talking about the inline guy that well, you'll get some receiving utility out of him, but like he plays inline, you can play him there every single snap and he's going to work for you as a blocker and be effective as a blocker. Michael Mayer was the best at that in this class. It's just he doesn't go downfield and get it, and he doesn't create separation along the route path. Like right when he got to Notre Dame, and by the way, you have to say this in his defense. I think it's every year since this is some crazy stat. Like every year since I think it was 2004, every Notre Dame tight end one that has come out of Notre Dame has been drafted. Like it's like some crazy stat like that. But Michael Mayer is the best tight end in Notre Dame history. Like objectively, right? Like, and so like he was doing it right away there, stays the 3 years, put up big numbers every single year. It's just the, like with him, he doesn't create the separation, but what he was really, really good at in college was in those contested situations, which he gets in a lot because he couldn't even shake the college guys. And the only concern with his receiving utility, it is if he's not going downfield and getting it, which you're not going to do in the NFL if you didn't do in college, and his intermediate utility, it's not shaking the guy. It's pinning him to his back and doing that stuff, which I seen that kid, you know, catching balls with like three guys hanging off his back in college. But will that translate to the better athletes? That's your only question with that. If it does, he's going to be a very good receiver. They compared him to they called him Baby Gronk in South Bend for this reason. I don't see that whatsoever, but like the one similarity with it is, like, you know, of course you have the inline thing where you block, but all the other, you know, and Michael Mayer is smaller, but like Gronkowski, you recall, like along the route path, it wasn't like he was shaking dudes out of their boots, right? So like a lot of times he would be in closer quarters. You just throw the ball to him and he's going to catch it, right? Like, you know, he's going to figure it out or whatever. But like that was Mayer in college. but it's not in as athletic a package as Gronkowski, and it's in a smaller physical frame. So, you know, again, is that going to translate? And you know that you're sort of condensed to the intermediate area with him in short, whatnot. But yeah, I mean, as far as the well-rounded game, that's what you're getting with him. Obviously, that's what the Raiders are buying here.
Well, and they wanted a guy, I mean, obviously, you know, coming from New England and stuff, they're going to value that what their tight end brings to the run blocking game, too. And Mayer is a very good, I mean, he's a monster run blocking. I think he's going to be a three down guy consistently. I think that he still has things, obviously, to work on as a blocker. I think he's better in line. I don't think you're going to be pulling him a lot as a run blocker and things like that. He's got a good anchor and stuff, but those things are going to allow him to be a three down guy. I really think, I mean, nobody's going to challenge him for snaps and stuff from the hop. Thor, and I'm blanking on it. I know my comp for Michael Mayer was Mark Andrews, or is Mark Andrews. What was yours?
For Mayer, it was Jason Witten. And it's not like, completely one-to-one, but like, that's the way that he plays the game. You know, Witten's another guy that didn't shake people, like, you know, out of their boots or whatever, but he was so dang smooth. He's catching everything that you throw within the catch radius, whatnot. If Mayer's game translates one-to-one in the NFL, he's going to be somewhere around that. But like, you know, again, like you still have to give the contextual thing of like, we don't know, because there's some guys where the contested catch thing translates like that. There's some guys it doesn't. For him, it needs to, because he's not shaking any NFL defenders along his route break.
I'm going to put you on the spot. Do you think it's going to translate? Because I lean yes, because I think his functional play strength shows up in so many other areas enough to where I think that the contested part of his game will translate. But what do you think?
Yeah, like, just because of how good he was at that at Notre Dame, you have to put the odds pretty high, you know, as far as that goes. Like, and last year was like when you got to particularly see it, because Notre Dame's starting quarterback got hurt right away, this Tyler Buckner kid. And then they had to play this noodle arm scrambler named Drew Pine. And then they didn't have any really other skill talent outside of Michael Mayer. So every team went into every game of just like, if we stop Michael Mayer, we're going to win. And so he was double teamed every dang time. And
sounds like a defensive approach against Dalton Kincaid last year. Got it.
Basically. But like with Kincaid, like, I know that his game is going to translate because he creates separation so dang easy. He catches every ball within his catch radius, no matter where he is on the field, right? Like downfield, towards the sidelines, like anything, he's getting the feet in. He's coming down with that ball. And then, you know, there's all the other instances where he's just open, right? And you can get him the ball, whatnot. That's the difference there where, yeah, you're wondering with Mayer. But, yeah, like, you know, as far as where they got him, it's an objective good pick where they got him in that slot. Because, in my opinion, Mayer should have been a late first rounder. He goes early second, so the value there is good.
So, while the Panthers... Mayer, you got to sit here and tell me, is that a guess the Carolina Panthers are going Jonathan Mingo, or is that official? Because I haven't seen anything yet. But it's confirmed, apparently. So Jonathan Mingo is going to Carolina, baby. What are your thoughts on that? I think it's early, man. You know I am not Jonathan Mingo. I think it's a little bit early. I think that if you're looking at the rest of these wide receivers, like, to me, Cedric Tillman is easily a better X wide receiver than somebody like Jonathan Mingo. I can see where Frank Reich is going to take a look at Jonathan Mingo. He's going to say, you know what? We had to get a Michael Pittman in round two. Now we're going to go get Mingo. You know how I feel. I do not think that Jonathan Mingo's testing shows up in his play. I think that he really put himself on the map based off the combine that he had, because the rest of his metrics do not scream that he's going to be any good. But, you know, we could take a break from me shading Mingo, but what are your thoughts on him and his fit in Carolina?
Yeah, I agree with that. He had a fabulous pre-draft process, obviously, right? Like, and when he came, like, you know, for instance, when we went down to Mobile at the Senior Bowl, like, I just thought he was, like, when you watch him at Ole Miss, you're talking about, like, how the play, the tape didn't match up to the athletic profile that he put out. And that's for sure. Like, I thought he was heavy footed, there, right? Like, and so, like, I didn't expect for, I also didn't give him credit as a route runner. That's where he opened my eyes in Mobile to start out with. I still didn't think he was the athlete that he ended up showing during the pre-draft testing, but I was like, oh, he actually knows how to run a route. Like, cause he was shaking people even outside of like not the stuff of taking him over the top and using that sort of stuff, but like along the route tree, like breaking off the routes and whatnot, shaking people in terms of that, which I didn't know that he was capable of from the time, you know, what I had seen of him at Ole Miss. And then he goes to the combine and he tested way better than I thought he would. So, you know, and then you start to like go back and look at his tape again, and you're seeing Jackson Dart, who they brought in last year, who I talked about a little bit before. He's airmailing all these different balls, different stuff like this. Jackson Dart was not good last year. So it's like, you know, a lot of yards were left on the field with Mingo. But like, there's a lot of things he still needs to be taught and he needs to smooth over. But like with him, you have the bigger athletic receiver, you know, at least from the testing, that has shown that he can also play in the slot. So, you know, one thing I'm interested in from Carolina's perspective, are they sitting dead right on him as a boundary receiver? Do they view him as a bully ball slot guy? Like they tried that a couple years ago with my former boy, Laviska Shenault. Like I've broken up with him since, but like they tried to get that bully ball slot. With Shenault, the issue with him was you had to manufacture the touches and then you got to unlock the fun with his run after the catch. But in the NFL, the manufacturing the touches thing became a bridge too far and he can't win downfield, whatnot. We've seen the concept with Jonathan Mingo winning downfield some. And now that you know the athleticism is better, like I say, maybe give him the benefit of the doubt as far as the quarterback situation went. But, you know, it probably sounds like there's a lot of, you know, my mind's in two different places with Mingo. It for sure is. Because, like, I came into the process lower on him. He did open my eyes for sure. And I did start to bake in some of that context for him. But a lot of this stuff that people are just giving him credit for, certainly Carolina has taken him at 39 over some of these different guys on the board. You're making a bit of a leap of faith with stuff that you haven't seen before. And you're doing it because you're like, this is a crappy receiver class. And there's not many other guys that would project as like potentially impact starting boundary receivers. And he's one of the guys that could, and he can also play the slot. So it's like, you know, I see why they're, you know, his value got pulled up and why Carolina took the shot here. But for me, he was more of a third round guy for the reasons that I said.
All right. Before we get back to the day two action, I've got to tell you, we have got a magical contest going on right now. We are partnered with the FFPC for the Fantasy Pros Championship. This thing has $6 million in total prizes. Yes, I said it. $6 million. In total prizes, including $1 million grand prize. A free Fantasy Pros and Betting Pros subscriptions are also up for grabs. You got to sign up at fantasypros.com/championship and use the promo code Fantasy Pros. That's the promo code Fantasy Pros to save yourself. And I know you like to save money. Save $25 on your entry. Enter before June 1st and draw before June 15th. To score an extra $35 early bird FFPC credit. Again, don't miss out on this. Visit fantasypros.com/championship and use the promo code FantasyPros for $25 off your entry. Happy drafting. Let's get back to the show.
Oh, my Lord.
You're getting the news before me. What do you got now? You got to break it to me.
The Packers took a pass catcher. They went with Luke Musgrave. Your thoughts, Thor?
I'm excited.
Are you?
I'm a Viking. I'm a diehard Vikings fan.
There we go. There's the shade in the realism.
Yeah.
I mean, this feels
to me they took the turn of the punch bowl of this awesome tight end class, and I'm grinning ear to ear.
Did you just call Luke Musgrave the turd in the punch bowl?
I sure did.
Oh man, so for everybody,
that's a legacy pick.
So for it definitely is, dude. So for everybody in the so for everybody in this room right now, give everybody the short spiel on Luke Musgrave and why this was a god-awful pick.
Well, Luke Musgrave, so I think he started, it was like 12 or 13 games in college, and he had like 40 low 40s catches. his entire career, receptions. He didn't get on the field initially at Oregon State, was struggling to get on the field, just like in terms of the depth chart. And then last year was supposed to be the breakout year. Like, we all thought it was coming, right? Like, college fantasy football players, college football guys thought it was coming. And the first two games, he did play well. And Oregon State pulled two upsets. I think it was Boise State and Fresno State. They were underdogs. They beat both of them teams outright. And Musgrave played well in those two games, I will say. But then he suffers the injury at the end of the second one. I think it was against Fresno State, where then he gets knocked out for the season, whatever. And the people that like Musgrave, what they'll tell you is like, well, he was going to break out. You started to see him break out. If he had never gotten injured, he would have dominated college football last year. And between that and his athletic profile in that package, he should be a first-round pick. The Packers just got a steal at 42. But the thing that I push back with on that is those first two games went against everything that we had seen from Musgrave before that. Musgrave, like, the thing that I like about him, and this is valuable in the NFL, right? Like, it's going, like, he threatens the seam. He can make plays downfield. He has the frame. He has the athletic profile for that. But he's a north-south dude. Like, he doesn't have any shake. You never saw him shake anyone intermediate range.
He can't break a tackle to save his life, Thor,
and
at all.
I believe that he broke two tackles. Sam LaPorta breaks two tackles before he gets out of bed. And Luke Musgrave had two his entire career. I mean,
give me Tucker Kraft handedly over Luke Musgrave. Like, it's not even freaking close, dude.
Yeah.
You know my thoughts on Luke Musgrave. I said he was going to be one of the bust picks in this draft. The fact that Green Bay sidesteps receiver in the first round, they go Lucas Van Ness, and then they decide
that one
finally give him a pass catcher, and it's freaking Luke Musgrave. It's so bad, man.
Yeah, I mean, we knew he was going to go in the second round, just size, athleticism, and then that his uncle was an NFL quarterback.
So stupid. Right?
Like, it's like, you know, when you show up on the college campus and they're, you know, like, some of the people have to rush and pledge for the frat, but then there's like the kid who's like dad or grandpa was there, and they always get in right away without having to do any of the nonsense. The legacies. That was Musgrave. Like, he was going in the second round with the other two things in conjunction with that without having to show very much, right? Like, it was like, oh, you know, let's see if he has an awesome pre-draft process. We seen him in Mobile. He was decent. I'm not going to throw shade on that. It was probably the best tight end that we saw down there. But, like, he didn't blow your socks off at all. Like, it was like, hit it down the fairway, which you want to see a little bit more. Like, because if it's truly like, oh, he's awesome, and it's just like, you know, the circumstances went against him in college, it's like, okay, here's your shot to show that. But, like, you know, like I said, he was just solid. And then, you know, he tested well. But, like, for instance, Zach Kuntz tested better. And Zach Kuntz actually had a better career than he did. Like, when you just look at the numbers and, like, whatnot. So, I don't know. Like, he would not have been my pick there, but I'm sure happy that it was the Packers that took Luke
Musgrave. I wish we still had Fitz in here so I could hear the pain in his voice.
Oh, I'd be mocking Fitz so hard.
I'm sure he's like shotgunning an IPA as we speak right now.
Oh, you know, he's already talked himself into it. You know, he's going to be like, oh, I never wanted Sam LaPorta. I was always on Luke Musgrave this whole process. You know, he's going to have to talk himself into it. Like, if the Vikings had taken him, I would be going through the stages trying to like tie my own mind into a loop to forget everything I know.
If the Saints would have taken Luke Musgrave, I just would have logged off. I'd have been like, this is the Thor solo show for the second round. I'm out, baby. I'm just going to go drink myself until I fall asleep.
Yeah.
It's just
that would have been me.
It's a bad pick, man. Like, he's so, and it's not even raw. I just think he's just straight up overrated. Like, outside of the athleticism, he's not bringing anything else to the table.
He is raw. Like, he is as raw as it gets for like a top. Was that slot 42 or something like that?
42. Like,
how often have you seen a tight end go back last decade taken in the top 42 that only started 12 or 13 college games and had like 42 catches over their entire career? Like, it just doesn't really happen very much. And I think if his name was, you know, Bill Jones instead of Musgrave, and, you know, Bill was his uncle and whatnot, like, maybe it would have gone down a little different. But yeah, like, some of those gaps were filled in for him perhaps because of that.
Looks like the Packers have traded up. They
Tampa Bay Buccaneers were set to pick. The Packers traded up, and they are taking Jaden Reed. Wow, this feels high for Jaden Reed.
Oh, my God. Excuse your reach, Green Bay.
Okay, Ooh. So just... All right, so the NFC Ooh. North, we have gotten the word that the NFC North is drunk drafting. Detroit took their swing of drunk drafting on
day one.
The Packers have picked up the totem pole, as it were. They have decided today they are going to be the drunk drafting team of the NFL. Now we have Luke Musgrave and Jaden Reed in round two.
Well, now we see why they don't pick the receivers early, because they don't know how to do it.
Such a ridiculous reach. There's no way he should have gone this high, man. Like, I could name you at least 4 to 5 receivers that should go before Jaden Reed is even like a thought inside of your skull.
Do you want my list of receivers that I have listed above Jaden Reed?
Please, that are still available. Thor, we need to fill some air here. Give me 10 or 15 names, man.
Marvin Mims, Cedric Tillman, yes, Josh Dobbs,
yes.
Tank Dell, Michael Wilson, A.T.
Yes.
Perry.
Yes.
Even Jalen Hyatt, who neither of us like. I have him above.
I don't care, but Xavier Hutchinson.
Let's see. Where did I go? Rashee Rice. It's a long way down. Rashee Rice, Tyler Scott, Puka Nacua, and Charlie Jones. I have all those guys above Jaden Reed. Up to this point in the draft, there's only been terrible. Two guys taken that were in the 80s on my list. Nobody below them. I had Mingo, and then Quan Martin, who just went, were both in the 80s on my list. Nobody below that. Up until now, I had Jaden Reed 120th on my board, the 17th receiver. There are guys that like him more.
I had Jaden Reed as my wide receiver 16 in this class. How the hell do you possibly, even if you're going to go with somebody of that archetype, how the hell do you possibly take Jaden Reed over even Tank Dell, Jalen Hyatt? Like, I don't get it, man.
So we're saying mean things about Jaden Reed. I'll say one nice thing, or I'll say a couple nice things.
No, I'm not saying anything bad about Jaden Reed. This is not a Jaden Reed type of shade. This is not a Jaden Reed knock. This all comes down to Jaden Reed was not a second round player. You pick Jaden Reed in the third, then fine. Okay, I think it's a little bit early, but you could twist my arm. Pick Jaden Reed in the fourth. Okay, let's go. You pick Jaden Reed in the second, and I wonder, did somebody slip you some acid in the war room? Like, what's going on here?
Yeah, well, they got the YOLO draft from Detroit. They passed the baton for day two, because I actually like Green Bay's pick in the first round, but I don't really know what Green Bay is doing this round. We talked about this with regards to the Detroit stuff. Like, typically when you see the mistakes and the huge reaches in the NFL draft, it's because the team is doing the opposite of BPA. They're doing the thing of like going into the round of like, we're earmarking this pick for this position. And the Packers, you know, yesterday they ate their broccoli with Lucas Van Ness. And again, I thought that was a quality pick. Today, they obviously went into it like, yesterday we got the guy for our defensive front. Today we're going to start out and we're going to find Jordan Love the weapons, right? It's just like, but the two guys that they did it for, I wouldn't have done. I think they reached up the board. And I don't know why, you know, Jaden Reed over some of those guys I was mentioning, like, if you want the smaller outside guy that can win outside and in the slot, like, why don't you take Marvin Mims then? Right. Like, or if you're because Jaden Reed, he can play, you know, we've seen him. He's done outside. He's done inside. And the thing that I like about him is like, he really competes at the catch point, really competes. Like, yeah, he's not, you know, it's not perfect. I prefer Marvin Mims at the catch point for like a smaller receiver if you're just going one-to-one. But like, I like the competitiveness as far as that goes, different stuff like that. And there's some, you know, like he's not a complete guy right now. Like, you know, certainly Michigan State, they didn't have the high octane passing attack, whatnot. He's a solid route runner, stuff like that. You see the ball skills, you're like, oh, maybe he can have the inside outside versatility. You sort of try to piece it together, but like, other people, when they were piecing all that stuff together, it was easier for them to jump to, oh, he's going to be a really good starter in the NFL, than it was for me. You know, those guys above him on that list, they're guys that are bigger than him, more athletic than him, and or showed more in college than Jaden Reed did. I never really caught the Jaden Reed bug this class, this process.
All right, Thor. Well, I'm about to get upset here. Speaking of weird freaking picks, the Seattle Seahawks mm-hmm. just selected Zach Charbonnet.
Interesting.
What?
Yeah.
What?
I mean, our boy, this should be a celebratory moment for us. You know, I feel like we raised them.
We
love Charbonnet.
Kenneth Walker really last weird. Year. And now they took Zach Charbonnet.
It's basically an accelerated version of that one weird year where the Patriots kept taking running backs every single pick.
Dude, I don't even know what to say right now. Like,
yeah, this is a weird one. Like,
this is so incredibly weird to me. I don't even know what to say, man. Go ahead and take this. Why I try to sit here and collect myself because this pick, this floored me, man.
It's a tough one to wrap your head around because obviously you sunk that equity into Walker and you're going to ride, you know, you presumably ride with Walker going forward. But like, if you were going to sink equity into a running back that like, you know, to play with Walker, like going forward, you would have taken the guy who's an awesome receiver, right? Like Kenneth Walker, that was the one thing at Michigan State or his entire career, Wake Forest as well, you go before then, that he didn't do. Like Charbonnet is a very underrated receiver. I will say that, but like, you're not drafting Zach Charbonnet to like be the receiving weapon in a backfield platoon. Like that, you know, you're like, outside of this scenario or whatever, but you know, I would have thought you would have been drafting him to be your bell cow from day one. Seattle obviously likes him as much as you and I did, but what does that say about Kenneth Walker and can they coexist together? Like, I don't know. Cause both those guys can handle usage. Right. So like, yeah, that's the hard thing to wrap your head around with it. I'll be interested to hear when they do their press conference afterwards. But like, to me, what this sort of reeks of is like, we love the player. He was the highest guy on our board. I'm sure that's the case when they say it, it's not going to be a cliche, and that they had a ton of draft equity because of all these extra picks. So it essentially becomes like a, what do you call it, luxury pick or whatever, but it's a hard one to sort of wrap your head around knowing the context of both those guys and then like, how do they fit together? And then how do you give them both the touches? Plus now we have an awesome receiving core that we had just added JSN to our two good receivers on the outside. So it's like, yeah, a lot of guys and only so many balls to go around.
I'm speechless, dude. I don't even, the only, and I'm going to go full galaxy brain here for a second.
Please.
The only way I could try to wrap my head around this is, does Kenneth Walker have some kind of suspension incoming? Is there something we don't know that's off the field? Because outside of this, I don't know what to say. Like, you took Kenneth Walker in the second round last year, and you just took Zach Charbonnet in the second this year. I don't know what the hell we're doing here, man.
Okay, well, I think, you know, to get away from the Seattle aspect of it, let's talk about the prospect. Because both you and I love Zach Charbonnet. So we're not criticizing, not criticizing the player and not even the slot. Like they got him 52. Zach Charbonnet is 43 on my board. Like the value is there. It's just the fit. But as far as the prospect, Zach Charbonnet was underrated this process. Kid that got on the field early at Michigan, ends up a couple years later transferring to UCLA. He was dang near dominant the last couple of years. He handles the usage for sure as a runner, but also, like I mentioned, he's an underrated receiver. He's not like the guy like Bijan or, you know, even our boy Evan Hall is going to go later where you can put him out in the slot or on the, it's not that kind of a thing. He's more of like the, you know, dump off close to the line of scrimmage guy. But like when he gets the ball, he's just as big of a handful as when you hand him the ball. He breaks tackles, like, you know, getting out of bed, right? Like, and so, like, in college, you know, even though it was, like, he was the dump-off guy, as far as that goes, not getting the ball in the most advantageous situations, he still averaged near 10 yards after the catch per reception. So I like that he adds that utility. certainly can handle the usage, break the tackles, do the inside work for sure. Can even do the some outside stuff as well. And he's got better wheels than you would think at his size. You know, he ran low 4.5s, I believe, at the combine. The last thing I'll say about him, and this speaks to how he's able to break so many tackles, is he of course has the play strength going for him and the way that he runs. But like one of the cool things he does is like in short quarters, when the guy's on the doorstep, he can change your angle real quick and in very subtle ways, where it goes from you get a flush shot on him coming downhill to all of a sudden it becomes an off angle arm tackle attempt just because of the quick movement, like right before he gets there. And like that makes all the difference. You know, it's like a pitcher who has a breaking ball that doesn't break until the very end when it's getting over the plate, like when the guy's already starting to swing, then all of a sudden the shelf drops off from it. Like, you know, and then you're falling the ball off, you're just missing it outright. Like, that's sort of what he presents to the defenders. And he's running through that arm tackle if you don't, you know, hit him flush, whatnot, one-on-one. Love the prospect. I think it's a very good value pick in the slot. It's just one of the odder teams in the NFL to do it that made that pick.
I don't even know what to say about it, man. Like, the whole thing is, like, I don't understand. Because here's the other thing, Thor. Seattle has other needs. Like, you look at the rest of this roster and stuff like that, and I'm going to go back through their picks here. I mean, they took Zach Charbonnet. They took Derek Hall. They still need a freaking starting center. We see John Michael Schmitz falling down the board. Why are you not addressing center? They could still use defensive help. I even if you have a crap ton of picks, you spent the second on Kenneth Walker last year. I don't get this, man. Like, I love Charbonnet because, like you talked about, he can handle volume. He's more agile than people give him credit for. I said, and I've said through the entire process, he's basically a little bit more agile, slimmer AJ Dillon. Like, I thought he was a hammer. He's got soft hands, can be an asset in the passing game. This is puzzling, to say the least. Like, I'm going to have to hear the reasoning out of Seattle. The Kansas City Chiefs have traded up. They have selected Rashee Rice, wide receiver out of SMU.
You know, this was my boy.
I know, but I thoughts, Thor.
Yeah, he ends up going higher than people thought.
I like Rice. I know that there was off the field stuff that took him off of a lot of teams' boards and stuff like that. We got to meet him at Senior Bowl in Mobile. Super nice kid. I mean, I loved interviewing him. Super, super awesome guy. So I'm not really buying into a lot of the off the field stuff. And apparently the Chiefs aren't either. They just took another second round wide receiver after Sky Moore. Now the question is, does Rashee Rice get put on the shelf in his rookie season like Sky Moore? What do you think here, Thor?
Yeah, we'll have to see about that. But yeah, I mean, the stuff that we heard about the off-field stuff and how that concerned teams, it was one of the reasons why I dropped him down my board a little bit. And now I wish I would have kept him where I had him, because it was closer to where the Chiefs ended up taking him. I like the overall package. He goes to SMU, and from the get, they were pounding him with targets. Like over the 4 years, he had nearly 400 catches, and you've seen him win at every level of the field. And you also seen him win both inside and outside. And there was reasons to believe that the game would translate, right? Like, one of the sort of deceiving things about him, he has a really long wingspan. He has the acceleration, the overall athletic package is there. You see him go downfield. When he goes up and gets it, he looks really good doing that, because he can get up in the air, full extension. He's getting higher than you, and he comes down with the ball. And one of those guys that, like, you try to go through his back, like, it doesn't, like, there's some guys where they're, you know, like, either, you know, you jar them so much or they just lose their concentration. Like, Rashee Rice can be jarred and you know, sort of like Jaden Reed's a smaller version of this, but like guys that can, you know, be knocked around like deep in the route and they're still gonna, like, it doesn't affect them at all, you know, as far as they're tracking the ball, bringing it in, whatnot. So I like all that stuff. He's a little bit stiff as far as the side to side movement. But, you know, one thing I'll say in his defense with, you know, with regards to that is, like, he knows his limitations. He's not trying to be JSN. right? Like, he doesn't try to beat you that way. The way that he creates his separation, it's both that explosion thing, then trying to stack you, getting downfield, or keeping you off the scent with the route tempo. Like, that's the thing that he's better at, sort of introducing the doubt to the defensive back with regards to that. And then you got the bigger catch radius because of those long arms. And he was very productive at SMU as well. So those are the things I'd say for him. I knocked him down maybe for erroneous reasons, you know, like with the, you know, as far as that stuff goes, because we talked to some, you know, the kid, we get brief access to him at the podium sessions or, you know, on the field, you get to pull him aside for a little bit. But like, you know, sometimes when you hear some of that character stuff from the NFL, a lot of times there's smoke or there's fire behind that smoke, whatever. But then there's a lot of instances where it's not, right? Like, I mean, Micah Parsons was one guy where, you know, all process, it was talked about like his character. He has zero character, like the opposite in the NFL, whatnot. So without that stuff, I would have had him a bit higher, like I say. But I ended up having him 98, wide receiver 13. And I think you could play early for the Chiefs. At least the utility of getting deep, going down and getting it. The rest of the stuff, you might have to polish off that route tree. But we did see him win intermediate in college. So he's got that going for him.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's definitely, I'm not going to say a luxury pick. They needed another wide receiver. Looking at Rashee Rice's game, he was, if you look at his various metrics versus both man and zone coverage, he stunk versus man coverage. He was borderline, per the metrics, elite versus zone coverage. So curious how they're going to deploy him. I think you could see him possibly used a good bit out of the slot. We could be seeing him as the Juju Smith-Schuster replacement, considering how much if they're going to run a lot of 11 personnel. I like the pick that the Dallas Cowboys just made, considering we talked about this in the first round conversation, Thor. They take Luke Schoonmaker, tight end out of Michigan. I'll put it out there, baby. He is going to be a better pro. He's going to be a better fantasy asset than Luke Musgrave. This is a really good pick, man. What are your thoughts on Luke Schoonmaker? I know, I believe you're in tandem with me. We were higher on him than some of the other tight ends in this class. Where did you have him in your ranks?
I had him tight end 8 and 108th overall. I will say that the folks like that he's worked with like him more than I did. It was just like this tight end class is so deep. Like, you know, it pushed some guys down. But like the coaches that he worked with at Michigan are really bullish on that kid. And you're going to be able to play him on special teams as well. So you get multiple different utilities with him and a super athletic kid that plays inline and blocks. Like, we have to see more of that receiving skill was just sort of dormant at Michigan, where that, you know, that's why I ended up having to rank him beneath, you know, for instance, like Zach Kuntz. It was like right around there on my board, whatnot. But like the rest of the stuff is certainly there with him. And you have the athletic profile to, you know, dream on as far as the receiving goes. But he's going to give you effort in the run game as a blocker for sure.
You sexy SOB, you. Do you have the same comp for Luke Schoonmaker as I do?
Dalton Schultz?
Yes, sir. I said he souped up Dalton Schultz,
that's
baby.
That's actually really funny.
And,
yeah.
I mean, we did not compare notes on that, but I think he's a souped up Dalton Schultz, and apparently the Dallas Cowboys felt the same exact way.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, he, you know, again, goes a little bit higher than I thought. You know, I think a lot of people thought going to go
he tested third really round. Well. I mean, I don't think he that he's really gotten well. To a point that his testing has necessarily fully crossed over to his production on the field. I don't think you see him.
Not as a receiver. Yeah, not yet.
Yeah, I mean, not as a tackle breaker, not as a receiver in the open field. I think that he is going to be a three down tight end from the word go, though, because I think that he's going to be an asset in the running game. He's got a strong anchor with run blocking. He could definitely seal the edge. Do you think he's going to be a three down guy?
If the health is with him, like if he can stay healthy in the NFL, yeah, for sure. Like, yeah, I mean, like the rest of it projects as a starting inline tight end, especially in an NFL that's moving more to the 12 personnel. Like, I just, like, there's some questions about the knees, like, is how long will that go, whatnot, but like, as long as the health is there with him, that's where this pick, like, if the health is there and then the some of that receiving skill gets polished off, or maybe it was just dormant because of the Michigan system, right? Like, but if they can, you know, sort of polish that aspect of his game, this pick will end up looking really good. And it's funny that Dallas, took him. You know, like we both had the Dalton Schultz comp on him, but those are the only things I'm concerned about. Coming into this past season, he only had 19 career catches. This past season, he had 35. Yeah, like he just didn't get pounded with the targets that some of these other kids did, but he certainly has the you know, overall toolkit coming in, and then obviously coached very well at Michigan as well. And you have the versatility, you know, the special teams utility, different stuff like that.
Yeah. I mean, look, I never bought into any of the Jake Ferguson, Peyton Hendershot hype. Like the thing that I've always said about Jake Ferguson is it's the coffin nail for tight ends. Guys that run over 4.8, I will never have interest in. You're looking at like not only the borderline athleticism to never be a fantasy guy, fantasy asset, but all, I mean, it's just, it really, you can name on one hand over the last 5 to 10 years, maybe a little bit farther back, how many guys that have run a 4.8 or higher and have been productive fantasy tight ends for us. It's really Kyle Rudolph. And maybe if Isaiah Likely becomes anything, that's it. End of list, man. So I never bought into any of the Jake Ferguson stuff. So per our own Mike Mayer, the Jacksonville Jaguars go with a tight end here, and it's not Darnell Washington. Apparently, reports are kind of coming out. He is falling due to a knee issue. The Jacksonville Jaguars take tight end Brenton Strange. Man, I'm surprised by that. Feels like a big reach here. What do you think about Strange, Thor?
It's definitely a reach, but it's funny. Like I kind of like that kid's game, and I did think he was kind of underrated. But like in this deep tight end, so I had him tight end 9. I had Schoonmaker was tight end 8, right? So like, you know, one at I don't know what the Darnell Washington, like the medical deal. You know, it's like we were just talking about with the other kid. Like we don't know, and even if we had the X-rays, like you and I, what are we gonna do with that? Like we wouldn't know or whatever. But like, you know, if that's the reason that he's getting bypassed, as far as Brenton Strange, he's a really interesting player. Where he was a solid recruit, obviously goes to a school that develops tight ends, and he has a versatile game where, you know, H-back, tight end, can bring him into the backfield, have him be a lead blocker, do different stuff like that, and he has a bit of receiving chops as well. And certainly the athletic package, 91st percentile, a little bit on the shorter side, more of the sought off guy. He's a shade under 6'4", is 253 pounds. The thing that I appreciated about his game is wherever you line him up, he's a really good blocker. So like my initial comp for him was Tommy Tremble, because he sort of reminded me of him as far as like the frame and getting after it as a blocker every single down. But Brenton Strange certainly has more receiving upside than Tommy Tremble. So I didn't want to, like, you know, like, how do you say, phantom with Dame? How do you say that? With faint praise, damn him with faint praise or whatever, by saying Tremble, because I didn't think it didn't give him enough credit for the receiving utility. So I ended up switching it to Jonnu Smith. But yeah, like you're somewhere in that range. And in another, like, you know, for instance, like you if you toss him into last year's tight end class, like in my rankings, he would have been like top, maybe even 3 or top 4, like somewhere like that, stacking that. It's just because this tight end class is deeper. He was tight end 9. And when you're slotting the board, that has to mean something. That's why he got pushed down a little bit. I had him 149 overall on my board. I like the skill set, but this is rich. This is too rich even for my blood.
This is too much. Like, I don't understand how you take a Brenton Strange, even with the most expensive rose colored glasses that you could possibly find, how you take Brenton Strange over Tucker Kraft is beyond me. I don't really understand that pick, especially you're looking at Doug Peterson. For me, I'm just sitting here in my chair asking myself, Thor, like, if you're Doug Peterson, how do you not look at the video of Tucker Kraft and say, you know what? He reminds me a whole hell of a lot of Dallas Goedert, baby. Like, I don't get that, but that's neither here nor there. I don't disagree with any of your points on Strange. This is definitely a reach for me.
Yeah, you know, just as far as Tucker, we talked about Tucker Kraft here, you know, last couple months privately of like, he was going to be an interesting eval for the NFL because he was so dominant as a receiver at the FCS level, but the athleticism was such a trump card where when he'd get the ball, he'd be open because he'd, you know, cinch someone with that, and nobody could physically match up with him at that level to the point where he didn't, like, you didn't see the development of his route tree just because he didn't need that to beat guys, right? So, like, he was the guy with the 102-mile-per-hour fastball in the FCS, and you just saw him flinging that thing past people. I happen to think his game is going to translate, and those receiving chops are going to translate to the next level. Obviously, you do too. But I think that's where maybe the NFL is like, well, you know, we haven't seen the nuanced route running out of Tucker Kraft, and he's jumping up the level, whatnot. So Tucker Kraft, he almost, it's funny, like, he almost did himself in some ways like Zay Flowers, although Zay Flowers didn't get penalized for it yesterday, but almost did himself a disservice by being loyal. There was blue blood teams, Alabama was one of them, that wanted Tucker Kraft to transfer for his last season of college football. If he had done that, it's like the thing we were just talking about.
Well, and with tell Osiris me he wouldn't Torrance. Have been starting over Cameron Latu. Like, he would have started over Cameron Latu. Oh,
we never would have seen Cameron Latu again.
No offense to Latu, but Latu is just like, he's just a guy, man.
Yeah.
Nothing special at all.
No, except apparently his S2 score. Someone leaked, like, he was like one of the only non-quarterbacks that you've seen, and it was like they were saying he had a really high S2. It's like, who's your source? Is it Cameron Latu's uncle?
Maybe. It's like, maybe second cousin's brother.
Yeah. But I don't care how smart Cameron Latu is. He wouldn't have fended off Tucker Kraft. But whole point being is, like, Tucker Kraft could have answered that question in his eval himself just by moving up. And you appreciate that the kid's loyal and wanted to stick it out with his brothers on his team. But, like, in that case, you would have liked that one-year audition on the bigger stage.
Marvin Mims sneaking into the second round, getting drafted by the Denver Broncos, man. I mean, what are your thoughts here? I think that we're looking at a receiving room. You got Courtland Sutton. You got Jerry Jeudy. Tim Patrick's coming back from injury. Does Marvin Mims start this year over Tim Patrick? You got new coach Sean Payton in the house. So what is he going to do with this receiving core? Does this mean that, like, maybe they move on from one of their guys? Although I don't think that's the case here. What do you see for Mims, and how does he kind of slot into this receiver room?
Marvin Mims starting day one. The only question is where, right? Like, but he's going to, like, Marvin Mims was so underrated this entire process. And it's for contextual reasons, like things that were more or less outside of his control. Like, he's to this day the all-time leader in Texas prep football history in receiving yards. And they play pretty good high school football down in Texas. Then he goes to the University of Oklahoma and tore it up as a true freshman. Got on the field immediately, was a difference maker immediately, etc. Last 2 years, circumstances went against him. Spencer Rattler, 2021, goes into the tank the first half of the season. Lincoln Riley has his foot out the door for the second half of the season. So it was just really disjointed. You didn't have the quarterback play early on. His whole skill set wasn't allowed to flower like it was the year before. And then this past season, obviously, Lincoln ditches them. Caleb Williams is out the door as well. And they bring in the defensive coordinator from Clemson, and they tried to slap together an offense, but it wasn't good. And so he just didn't have the ability, again, to sort of show his skill set in the same way that he had earlier in his career. But he has the athleticism. He has proven the concept that he can win both inside and outside. He did both at Oklahoma, and for a smaller receiver, is awesome down the field. Awesome down the field. Proven. He tracks that ball like a hunting dog down the field, and he's coming down with it. If you combine the you know, top 10 catches of every receiver in this class and then just quantified it, Marvin Mims would blow everyone out of the water. He makes some circus catches that don't even look real down the field. And an enormous amount of his utility came down the field at Oklahoma. Every single season he was at Oklahoma, 35% or more of his targets came 20-plus yards downfield. We know that he can win downfield. He's a killer downfield, and including on the outside, even for a smaller receiver. Oklahoma just didn't use him as much in the intermediate area. He goes to the pre-draft process, shows that he's at, like, I wasn't concerned about his agility. That guy can very clearly boogie on the field. But, like, it, you know, again, like, they just didn't use him as much with that because they were so often sending him down the field, and he was winning so often down the field. It's the only question you have about him. You got to flesh out the route tree just a little bit. but all the skills are there, and the ball skills at that size are rare.
All right, everyone, that's the show. Thank you so much for tuning in. We had a ton of fun with all of our subscribers in Discord recording the show, taking questions, and talking about all these picks live. We're going to be back on Monday to talk about our must-draft rookies in fantasy. And, hey, I talked about this earlier, but I got to remind you before we get up out of here, the FFPC Fantasy Pros Championship. Get your shot at $1 million in grand prize money. Visit fantasypros.com/championship and use the promo code FANTASYPROS for $25 off your entry. My name's D-Bro. I'm out of here. I'll see you at the top.
Thanks for listening to the Fantasy Pros Football Podcast. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Fantasy Pros and subscribe to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/FantasyPros.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Hey guys, back at the playground again, huh?
Yep. You know what this playground could use? A wine country.
Heck yeah! And some waves so we could go surfing.
Oh, yeah. Ah, love that!
A redwood forest would be cool.
I'm in!
Ah, ski slopes.
Let's do it!
Can a girl go shopping?
Yeah, baby!
Wait! Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
There's no distance too far for the perfect trip.
Hi, checking in for...
Or the perfect table.
Hey, where are you?
Coming!
And when you get access to Resi Priority Notify with your Amex Platinum card...
Hey, this looks amazing!
I'm so glad you made it.
And travel benefits at fine hotels and resorts booked through Amex Travel... It's worth the trip. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.